Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
All right. Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
I'm Lori. We're both here again.
It's been a minute, you know, since we released an episode. It feels like it's been forever. It's actually only been like a week, but
it kind of feels like forever because we recorded a whole bunch in one day, and now we haven't recorded in a while.
So I feel like, are we new at this again? Are we still podcasters, or like we lost that? Like,
what's the status? We don't know.
Need to know. Today we are talking about the second wound. So you want to fill us in on what a second wound is, Lori?
I will talk about what the second wound is. So the second wound really refers to a re-victimization. So basically there's a ton of research that supports the idea that while obviously an abuse experience is very traumatic and has all kinds of an impact on the survivor, but the things that either make the recovery so much harder or really not so bad really has to do with the second wound. It has to do with the response of the people to which the person disclosed. So if the response is, I believe you, we are here with you, we are going to help make sure you're safe, this is not your fault, and is supportive and positive in all of the ways that we would hope that the response would be, the recovery is much smoother. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it is surprisingly common that survivors experience all kinds of victim blaming and denial and other damaging responses to their life experiences.
Yeah. Can we pause there for a second and just like highlight the fact that like while we're going to talk about all the different second wounds in my own story, that the support, you know, it's a strange place to be, because the support and the belief and the strangers who have been like, I stand with you, I believe you, I hear you, even in just doing this podcast, has been a little bit undoing some of that for me. So even just in this really micro like example of the second wound versus when that doesn't happen, I can attest to the fact that that's true.
Do you want to talk about like the complexity of that a little bit? Like,
what do you mean?
Well, like we've just spent some time talking about how it is so overwhelmingly encouraging and you feel so much less alone in this, because there are so many people who have been so encouraging. But there's also that those narratives in your head that we talked about before of like, nobody's going to believe you and you're just attention seeking and you're dramatic and you're like, anyway, so
the attention seeking one is definitely the one that screams the loudest right now, because, you know, we started out with this being so, it just like, we had no idea what we were doing. We had no idea what we were stepping into. It was just really a means to an end. Hopefully if, you know, a few more people are aware and a few more people listen, it will be safer. And then we got to where we are today. And, that's hard to reconcile for me in my brain. Like I never asked for this. And yet here we are, and it's not all bad. It's not bad. It's good to have the support, and it definitely undoes
not a word. Nope.
Damn it. Can't put that in word.
No, undoes does not go into word. How does one even spell undoes?
I don't know. know. Sometimes I put words into Wordle that are not words, and I know they're not words. And I'm like, well, maybe it's a word that I don't know. And I'm just trying to get the right letters. And then it's always like, that's not a word in the dictionary. Like, okay, Wordle, thank you. I know.
Okay, we haven't talked about this, but I actually Wordled for the first time when we were at Natalie's graduation. And
stop.
I got it in 4 tries.
That's actually not very good. Just to be clear, I've gotten it in 2. And some, I have had coworkers who get it in like their first word. Yeah. So
okay,
4, I mean, 4 is decent, but I'm just saying, like, man. I don't feel like you should be like promoting that. Like,
all right. Never mind. I guess I don't Wordle.
I don't know. You can, people can comment on that. Do you think no. Lori is a successful Wordler?
Let's not comment on that. Okay. Yikes. All right.
Okay. Here we go.
Yep. So anyway, it is obviously very complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Because let's talk about this. So my personality, your personality is really that advocacy, and I mean, I worked for a not-for-profit clinic for many years and was all about all of the things, promote, you know, raise the money, raise the things, do all the whatever. Speak up for others. Yes. And say, okay, I worked on in the inner city, the east side of Buffalo. And it was like, this is a marginalized group. And these people who don't have health insurance and these people need X, Y, and Z. And why is no one helping? And so you scream it from the rooftops because that is what needs to happen. But in this case, I find myself super split between, yeah, that's my personality, and there's other victims, and this whole thing of family-controlled trafficking and sexual abuse and sexual assault, I mean, it's rampant in our world right now. And I'm finding all of these holes in the system that need to be fixed, need to be filled. And so that advocate part of me is like coming unglued, like, we got to do all the things because of all the people. And this is my real life. This is actually my story. This is actually what happened to me, what, you know, is happening to me. And it's very hard to make those two things go together.
Right. Because as a survivor, there's a part of you that just really wants to keep it all from the light.
Yes.
Because it's so very hard to live that out there in the world and be like, yes, this is a part of me.
Yeah. Well, and I have all of these second wounds that are throbbing right now because it is like so many people have said, you just want attention. Someone actually commented on a terrible thing and said, don't be so quick to jump on the pity train. And it literally sent me flying because it's like, that could not be the farthest thing from how this started and what our goal here is and what we wanted. So I think the second wound thing is a really good thing to talk about today as we kind of move forward in our podcast and some other things that I think it's important to talk about.
Well, it is important because so the rest of it is that, you know, we can talk a lot about the first wound, right? The abuse, and we have, and we will continue to, but people have said, so why are we targeting the second wound rather than the first? So specifically, some people have brought that to us about targeting, what they're saying is that why are we targeting the chapel, right? So let's answer that question because we're not even talking here about specifically the chapel. We are talking about the second wound. So why? Well, part of that is just because we address one wrong does not keep us from addressing the other.
Right.
We are not failing or unwilling to address the abusers in every way that we have the opportunity to address, and that will continue to be so, right?
Absolutely.
But addressing that does not stop us from addressing the second wound,
right?
The other piece of it, though, is people who sexually abuse a child or sexually assault a person, they're not going to just stop on their own. They're not going to stop because someone brings it to their attention. Hey, oh, by the way, do you realize that that's not an okay thing to do? No, they're going to be stopped by accountability, whether that's law enforcement or somebody directly in their world confronting them and putting a stop to it. But second wound people, people who are now listening to the podcast, who are now getting information that perhaps they didn't have before, they need they were in the past perhaps unaware or misguided in their mindset and their approach. So information is useful for changing the way that that goes. It's not like people who abuse a person, they don't need to be told, oh, by the way, that's illegal.
Right.
By the way, that's not morally acceptable.
Right.
They are well aware and they just don't care.
Right.
Second wound people, the assumption is that if they get information, they will do it differently.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the second wound people have potential to cause not as much harm as the original abuse, but I mean, it's, you know, it's devastating. It's a devastating thing that happens because there's already so much trauma and you just pile on and pile on and pile on. It ends up leaving survivors that feel blindsided. They feel confused. They feel alone. You know, we teach kids to tell when something bad happens, if someone is hurting them or touching them in a way that they don't like or is uncomfortable. We teach them to tell. But what happens when a child comes forward, when I came forward in seventh grade and a second wound was placed all over it? And I was not only still stuck in the situation, but so like why? Like we teach children to tell. And then when we don't have the right response when they do, what does that say to them, right?
And then, oh, by the way, what they've learned is that if something bad is happening to me, it's a bad idea to go to the adults in my world. So then what happens the next time something bad happens to them?
Right.
So now we have a compounding of trauma as well as a compounding of the wounding.
Right, right. No, that's absolutely.
Not okay.
You can decline to talk about this if you want, but I do think about the one story that you have told about Natalie, and you can clip her name out actually if you want. Sorry.
No, she'd be fine with it.
You know, where she had a situation, you can talk about it. But the one thing I want to say about that is that she knew to tell, you had the right response, and it wasn't something that like traumatically impacted her life because it was second wound after second wound, right?
That's mostly true, but that's actually one of the things when I've talked about that, you know, I've gotten it wrong at times in the past. So the basic situation is that my daughter is my youngest kid. So she's got two older brothers, and one of her oldest brother's friends grabbed her and kissed her when she had just turned 12 and he was 16. And it was a whole big thing. And it wasn't nothing. Obviously, we're talking about like bee sting kind of trauma. But it was a violation of her boundaries that was unacceptable. And then this person continued to lie about what happened, and it was just a whole thing. But she, thank God, immediately came home and told me right away. And we tried to address it with the person and with his parents. And so the part that I got wrong was I continued to encourage her to go back and try to work through the problem with this kid and his parents, even though they were responding very inappropriately. So they weren't being like, you're a liar or anything horrendous, but they were like, well, let's all like get along and we need to forgive. And like, but isn't he telling the truth? And like, it was all just like, I don't know, gaslighty. And honestly, for months, I made her sit through conversations with these people because I believed that the right thing was to try to make it work. And right. That has absolutely informed part of why, like, I'm pretty clear that until somebody is in a place where it's evident that they've had a change of mind or heart, it does not do us any good to continue to engage in conversation past a certain point.
Yeah. I guess my point was though, is that it doesn't make her not, no, I think it's good. It doesn't make her not tell you things. Like, it wasn't like you were like, you're being dramatic. You're not. That's right. Silly. Like, Natalie, who cares? You know,
right.
You were like, okay, we got to confront these people and be like, hell no, you can't do this to my kid. Right.
Right.
That yes. is the correct response. And
yes.
And I think, yeah, she doesn't hesitate to tell you things now. So that's good.
And she is also a very strong advocate for herself and others. Yeah. There have been many times, and I do think that that whole experience shaped her in some very positive ways because she is a fierce advocate.
Yeah, we're not cutting that. That's good.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we're not cutting anything today. This is like all like the, everything. What's the phrase? All the things on the table, but what's the actual thing that we're putting on the table?
I don't even know.
Jeez, you're supposed to know these like old-timey phrases.
I know all kinds of old timey phrases, but okay.
Okay. Okay. You know, my Evelyn, she like sings these little like songs that like Aunt Patty knows from like the grandma and, you know, like the Cinderella dressed in yellow. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, I haven't heard that. And oh my goodness.
So my father's side of the family, very musical, and every family gathering we ever had, honestly, ended up with sitting around the piano, my grandmother playing all the old 40s and songs. And so I know all those. I used to sing them to my kids when they were little.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I got that. Yeah, that's cool. Okay.
Anyway, super fun.
Okay. So all of the second wounds, just, I guess, high level. I mean, there's been so many, really. There would be no way to kind of divulge all of them. But the big ones, of course, the beginning, obviously, the private school that I went to, seventh grade, called my parents, who were my abusers, instead of calling CPS. And that resulted in people telling me, you're lying, you know, you are being dramatic. That started the narrative, really. So that was a second wound that really like carried through my entire life.
Partly because there were so many people mm-hmm. who were affected by that.
Yes.
Because you had to apologize to so many people.
Right.
And so many people knew.
Right. It wasn't one person's bad reaction. It was an entire organization's bad reaction and peers of mine, their reaction, and teachers of mine, their reaction. So it was just piled on piled on piled. And
plus the fact that all of those people now would go back if something else came up where you were not okay. Mm-hmm. Now they would be, oh, but we know this about her. Like she, remember, don't you remember? She's the girl back at her school who blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So now you're still all the more stuck.
Right. Absolutely. So that then moving into kind of high school, you know, middle school, high school, youth group, small group leaders not believing me, youth pastor who still to this day, you know, is saying things that are just wildly hurtful
and then acted offended at being called out on
acted
that.
Acted so offended. He's hurt because we call like guy. Think about it. Like, dude, I want to tell you about yourself right now. You know, I'm not gonna, but I'm gonna say
spicy.
My friend Jennifer used to say at the clinic, she would literally just constantly say the phrase, I'm gonna tell that person about themselves. And I just think that's the best phrase ever because it's like, I just want to like paint a picture for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was high school. So we already have the second wound from private school. Now we move into high school youth group and we're just continuing the narrative. We're just continuing to pile on. So again, it makes it feel like why on earth would I ever talk about this ever, 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 ever again? And now I have all of this additional trauma and additional wounding because of these people, right? From there, it's, you know, biblical counselors before I met lovely Lori.
Lovely
That's
Lori.
So weird.
It's a nice alliteration.
I know. God, I need food.
Again, we're doing this hungry. Do you see what happens, everyone, when we do this hungry? Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So, but yeah, biblical counselors who, again, they were being manipulated by my abusers. They were being given a narrative before I ever even met them of who I was and what I was, you know, what I was after, I guess, which
is, and they had an agenda.
They had an agenda. Yes.
So forgiveness was the agenda.
Talk about the agenda of biblical counselors.
Okay,
you got it somewhere in here.
Okay. So I have to say in fairness, right? Not all biblical counselors are cut from the same cloth, right? So I am aware.
That is such a nice way to put it.
Okay, see, I'm not that hangry yet. So not all biblical counselors. So we don't want to lump them all in. There are some, and I do believe that there's probably some growth in the field so that they are being more trauma-informed and that they are open to other things beyond using scripture as a way of fixing everything. However, if we're going to talk about the biblical counselors that Kate encountered up until now, I have to say that in many ways, thinking about that is one of the worst pieces for me because I feel so strongly about what happens in the counseling room. And I tried to find another way of saying this, but I couldn't think of a better way. But I see this as a sacred trust that people come in here at their most vulnerable, preparing to perhaps open themselves up. And to people are so afraid and hoping for relief. They just want to be seen and known and valued. For them to come in and then to be responded to in a way that is less than affirming, that is less than, this is an entirely safe place where you can come with all of the mess and be still seen and cared for. It just makes me sick to my stomach, honestly, to think about that. So if Kate had come in and had some kind of sense that I had an agenda, that forgiveness was the goal, that we were absolutely, we had to get as quickly as possible to the place of forgiveness, that's so dismissive of the actual felt experience of somebody who's been traumatized, that it just shoves it all back into a box. So timing is everything in a counseling thing. And of course, I am all about, and we all understand that not forgiving someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to get sick. I get it. Yes, that's true. I have lived in that space myself of being very clear that I'm harboring is making me feel worse than the person who did some bad thing to me. Yes, ultimately, letting that go, releasing it is really important, but that can't be the place that we lead. It has to be at the right time and in the right way. And by the way, forgiveness does not mean saying that what that person did is fine. It also doesn't mean that we forget. It also doesn't mean that there's not accountability. Mm-hmm. It does mean that I'm choosing to not hang on to the bitterness because I don't want to anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I think another agenda, a lot of biblical counselors is like the idea of like, put it all back in the box so that, at least in my experience, again, I agree, not everyone's cut from the same cloth, but in my experience, it was more of like the evangelizing of the person of me mm-hmm. than it was, you know, actually dealing with the trauma, mm. right? It was more like,
let's make you a better Christian.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Like let's make sure that you know that, you know, if you just do all the right things, then God will love you more, which again, with my specific trauma was like the worst kind of experience because that it just reinforced. So, yeah. So biblical counselors.
Well, and right. That reinforces that idea of it's you, you're the problem.
Yeah.
Right. This bad thing happened to you, but
yep.
the problem isn't that, it's that you're not good enough to forgive.
Right. Which is how Church Me was then born because mm-hmm. I tried to be good enough. So. So youth group leaders, youth pastor, again, more second wounding, biblical counselors, church people, again, pile on. So it's like I'm literally living underwater of these things. And then you have Liberty, right? I go to Liberty and it's the same thing. It's that biblical, you know, you just have to go to church more. You just have to be a better person. You just have to in order to move on.
And then can I just say, and then again, this isn't because anybody did it wrong, right? But then there are so many people who are like, oh, but we want you to have this relationship with God, Kate, right? But okay, then the people of God need to represent him well.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. This is not representing him well. No. Why on earth would you want that or find that to be something safe?
Right. Mm. No, for okay. sure. I'm looking at your shoes and I just like, because
they're so cute.
They are cute and they look comfortable. Are they comfortable? They because are. I need new flats for work.
So. They are. The problem is they're fabric. And so you can't ever, it can't be wet on the ground or your feet get wet. And that's a terrible feeling.
That was a terrible feeling.
I know.
I like them though. Okay.
Squirrels in traffic.
Okay, so that brings us then to law enforcement, which I really think we probably need to do an episode about law enforcement. Mm-hmm. There have been – so I actually read a thing yesterday. There's actually an Instagram called The Second Wound, and you should follow it because mm-hmm. it's really excellent information. There's also an Instagram called Within Families that talks specifically about this family-controlled trafficking and how it's really under-researched, really underrepresented in the human trafficking awareness world. And I actually reached out to them and was like, what are you doing? Like, they're just great. The information they post is great. So one of those two things posted something yesterday, and I wish I could remember which one it was, but about questions that survivors are kind of tired of answering. And one of the questions was, why are your abusers not in jail? Oh, yeah. And man, am I tired of answering that question. It's not wrong to ask it. I get why people are asking it, you know, because it does seem in this like Olivia Benson, you know, Law and Order SVU, that's what's in all of our minds, that it should just be cut and dry. These people did these things. There's all this evidence and now they go to jail. But unfortunately, that is not even a little bit how that goes. So I do think it's important maybe in the future to do an episode about that, because I think people are wondering, like, what is going on? Like, how can this be happening in our backyard? And it's not, these people are not already in jail.
And I think some people ask that question, mostly those people ask that question, like, what? I can't, it's horrible. How is it possible?
Oh, absolutely.
But then there are also some people who are asking it like, if this is really so bad, then why aren't they in jail?
Yes.
Like with a little skepticism.
Or why didn't I see it on the news?
Right.
Or why wasn't it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's definitely, there's a twofold thing there. Mm-hmm. The people who are genuinely asking out of concern, like, oh my goodness, they should be in jail. How do we make that happen? That is.
We get that.
Yeah, we totally get that. It's just a question that comes up all the time. And I think people just really, until you have walked the road of dealing with law enforcement, you really don't know. But so yeah, law enforcement, same thing. You know, I heard so many times, it's not that I don't believe you, it's that I have to convince my bosses and they have to convince their bosses, and there has to be beyond a shadow of a doubt, but you know, whatever. That's a second wound too, because it's like, what is wrong with me? And then you read the papers that are like, you know, Giselle Maxwell or whatever, and she's going to spend the rest of her life. And like, why, like, what is wrong with me that is not going to be the case, you know?
Or even honestly, since doing this, I'm also watching going, okay, so wait, so they're arresting someone for shoplifting.
Yeah. Yes. There's right. I know. There's a whole bunch of things that people get arrested for that are like just way less. Yeah.
And we understand this is so complicated, so it takes more time.
Yeah, and it spans over, I mean, decades, right? So there's so many different things that come into play with that.
But it's way more complicated than most people realize. Right.
But dealing with law enforcement has also been a second wound for me, because I either get that where it's the right person, I'm talking to the right people. And I actually, a law enforcement person actually said to us one time, my boss is basically like, is she fine? Like, is she okay? She's not dead. She's not like living on the street. Okay, then this is not priority. And that's not okay. Like, that is not a correct response.
We've also had, because it's like, which county are you in? Which county do you live in? Which county did the event happen in?
Right.
And oh, by the way, there's city police and county police and state police and federal law enforcement. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what to tell you. Yeah. Like, and then nobody talks to each other. So it can be very difficult to navigate.
Yeah. And then, right. And then some of the more local law enforcement look at us like I got three heads, right? Because it's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, it's just, right. We should definitely do an episode on it. But the law enforcement, definitely a second wound. Not always intentionally, for sure. But definitely, you know, a really, really difficult piece for me that has been just hard to navigate.
Well, for you to get to a place where you are like brave enough to even go back to that drawing board again after previous experiences.
Yeah.
Three that we've listed, right? Where law enforcement were involved, for you to even be brave enough and then to be met with complexity and or like just a complicated process is.
And a time consuming process. Mm. I mean, we're talking like years in the making, you know?
And emotional, mental energy.
Yeah.
Like, how many people am I going to tell my experience to? And I feel all the feelings that go with that, because again, there's also the, I can't look like I am not upset at all, because that maybe makes it hard to believe what I'm saying,
right.
But I also can't be too upset, because then it's not usable.
Right.
Like that whole.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Very hard.
So the most recent second wound, of course, and again, people have asked us, you know, why are you targeting the chapel? Why are you going, you know, why are you pressing so hard into that? I love it when people ask why we're being so aggressive. That is like,
that's a favorite word.
You haven't even seen aggressive. Okay.
And by the way, how is it aggression to just say what happened?
I know.
It's just
when you're just literally presenting facts. In writing, facts. That's not aggression. That's just facts.
Reporting.
Right. Look at us journalists over here.
Just the facts.
Oh, my God.
See, you said you like the old things. Walter Cronkite. Oh, no, that wasn't Walter Cronkite.
Jeez, that wasn't
Do you even know who he is?
Walter Cronkite. Yeah. You know what? I only know the name from the movie Bruce Almighty.
Oh,
have you seen that movie?
Yes.
It's a good one.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, anyway.
Have you watched Schitt's Creek yet?
I haven't. Well, I know. I actually started a teeny tiny bit. It's the guy with the dark, the big bushy eyebrows right in the dark glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started, but.
I will be honest with you. First couple episodes, you're like, what in the world is this? Yeah. But I'm telling you.
I got to try.
It's so good.
I know.
It's just the sarcasm is on point.
We've been watching Jane the Virgin.
I do like Jane the Virgin.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah. It is funny. It's like cute and lighthearted and I like it.
See? I'm about that.
I know, but Schitt's Creek is literally like all the sarcasm.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that would be our thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Anyway, the chapel. So, yeah, obviously we have covered the chapel 1,000 different ways. But again, the second wounding is that whole response of the mediocre, the like, yeah, we kind of believe you, but we don't really. It speaks the exact same language. It reinforces the exact same narrative on and on and on. So,
and there's been an interesting amount of silence from the chapel of late, in spite of the fact that we've made it very clear kind of what we'd be looking for as a path forward.
Oh, yes. No, did they just not read it? Like, it's very confusing.
I don't know. I think maybe they're hoping it's just going to die down.
Yeah. Well, it's not. So get ready for that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, same thing, right? It's like, okay, well, that's fine, but now how do we reconcile? Like, it's not really about reconciling. It's about you doing it right. Mm-hmm. So that was a little aggressive, that comment. But I am hungry, so I would also just – that's like full disclosure, okay?
I think that it's really impossible to really calculate the impact of the second wound because people are always asking – and even if they don't come right out and ask, I know they're wondering, and sometimes they ask in sideways ways, why didn't you tell? Mm-hmm. And if you did tell, then why didn't you tell again? And why didn't you tell louder or more directly or all the things? And the answer is the second wound, because when you've tried to tell and then you get responded to in a way that makes you feel small or invisible or crazy or whatever, you're certainly not going to tell again or tell louder. You're going to tentatively, potentially, right, try if you ever try again.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And then I think people, there's a tendency to minimize the impact of those negative reactions. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency for people to be like, okay, well, that happened, but shouldn't you be getting over it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. There's again another Instagram page called Defend Survivors, and they constantly talk about the survivor is the expert on their experience. You do not get to tell them how and when and why they should heal. And that is what a lot of this feels like, is like, okay, it happened, but now it's time to kind of move on, you know? And, again, not that that's not true. Healing is definitely important and definitely the path forward in life. You can't stay stuck in this place, but this place is a lot bigger than the outside world maybe realizes.
And when there is someone who has not responded well, who has created a second wound, if they come back around and they want another shot at it, they are going to have to be 1,000% on point in how they respond.
Yes.
To get a survivor to stay engaged in the conversation.
Yeah.
And that rarely happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So
some of the things when people come back around and they ask for a second chance to address, right? When they say, okay, yeah, we kind of realize that maybe we didn't get it right, but we want to talk. Let's sit down. Let's have a meeting. Right. And okay, let's try again. So some of what we then end up hearing, or when there's been a second wound, are things like, okay, but you've been assuming things because, you know, we haven't talked about this. So what's your response when someone says, okay, you're assuming things?
Right. No, I have been reading the things that you have been communicating, and I, you know, even if you haven't said it to my face, I have seen the backstory. I have seen the communication. I have seen the things that you have. Again, it's actions speak louder than words, right? Like, you're sitting in front of me saying that I've been assuming things, but actually I've just been watching what you've been doing.
And not doing.
And not doing. Right. Right.
So how about things like, okay, but I'm your pastor and I care about you, or I'm your friend and I care about you, or I'm your brother and I care about you.
Right.
Like,
yeah. So I would say, yeah, if you've been paying attention to any of this, you would realize that those relationships do not give you safe status. Just because you were my friend, just because you were my pastor, just because you were my family, it doesn't assume that you are a safe person. That's especially true for me, considering that the, you know, it's family controlled trafficking. There's my family are the ones that have done this. And so, like, that is the ultimate, like, nothing gives you safe status until you have proven yourself to be a safe person.
It's pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
So how about things like, well, how come you are like talking to them about this, but you won't talk to us about this?
Again, it's the safe status thing. There are people who are maybe, you know, again, if you want to talk about like closeness, like that's your family, that's your parent, that's your whatever, doesn't giving them safe status. There are people who are not those things who have been supportive. Their responses at each step have been directly supportive, directly helpful, without a shadow of a doubt, without hesitation. We are here. We see you. We believe you. And that is why they hold that place for me.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
How about things like, well, of course we have questions about the details of what you're sharing.
Yeah, I feel like it's, again, the questions, it's the difference between a question coming from a place of doubt and a question coming from a place of caring, right? There's, I mean, my in-laws, their first response was, we believe you, we support you, how can we help? Not that they didn't have questions. Of course they had questions, but their questions came after the initial, we believe you, we support you, how can we help? And then it was, well, what about this? And how help me make sense of this? But their questions came from a place of support. We want to know how to best support you. And so that is why we're asking the questions, not because you have anything to prove to us, just because we're trying to put it all together in our heads. But questions that come from, you know, their own investigation, typically sound more like doubt, typically sound more like, well, make this make sense for me, because right now it doesn't.
Well, and again, the argument could be made, okay, but you're assuming that. No, actually.
No, I'm actually reading the questions that you are sending. I'm reading the questions that you've asked of other people. I'm reading the transcripts from conversations you've had with other people. And any person with a brain would be able to see that and hear that as doubtful and inquisitive in a way that is not supportive. There is a very different, those are two very different things.
It ends up being just the like even the tiniest little drop of poison is still poison. Mm-hmm. So you can say whatever you want, like, well, I didn't quite mean it that way, or, but no, the tiniest drop of poison when there's already been multiple second wounds, mm-hmm, is still poison.
And that's really important to talk about. There's already been multiple second wounding within this scenario, right? We're not talking about someone who is hearing it for the first time and really doesn't know how to ask the questions and they have questions. That's different. We're talking about someone who has already done it wrong again and again and again, and now is coming back like, but I'm not doing it wrong, you know?
Okay, so I'm about to go on a left tangent here. Okay. We might end up cutting this, but I, you know, in Buffalo here, there has been a recent very tragic shooting. Mm-hmm. And I think that the race conversation is also kind of similar to this.
Absolutely.
That people of color, in my experience, they are happy to engage with others about that question and about the dynamics of racial experiences when they sense that the person is coming to them from a place of deep respect.
Yes.
And just openness to hearing the truth of what they have to say.
Yep.
And that's what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. I think that's 100%. I don't think you should cut that. I think that's 100% on point. I think that I just had this conversation. Actually, my old boss from the clinic called me the other day. She's been listening to the podcast. She's been really super supportive, and she still runs the clinic on the east side of Buffalo. So they are literally in the throes of trying to support this community and trying to deal with the grief of it all, as well as just, I mean, wound upon wound upon wound. This is not an isolated incident. This is a community of people who have been struggling, have been suffering, and who have felt marginalized. And now this really, traumatic, tragic event. And so she's in the throes of that. But yeah, we had this conversation of like, you know, it's really nice for the politicians to fly in and say all the nice words and have all the cameras, but who is actually supporting the people? And it's those people who are actually there supporting the people day in and day out, meeting the tangible needs, who are then
the safe people.
The safe people to open the conversation up of, okay, how do we do it better? The people who are flying in, who are just here for the cameras and all the things, those are not the safe people to talk to. Those are not this community of people. They are not going to open up about this to them. It's going to be the people on the ground who are safe to have the conversation with. So I think you're, yeah, absolutely.
It's an accurate parallel.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. That part. So if somebody comes to you to say, well, why the aggression?
Again, I don't know when telling is, how did that become aggression? You know, telling the story, telling my story, telling the true facts of what happened. I'm not sure. Again, that's also goes back to the second wounding way back when I was, you know, kind of an unpleasant human being because of all the things that I was living through. And people called it aggression, and people called, you know, so that whole phrase of like, why am I being aggressive is like you don't even know what aggression looks like. Like the amount of restraint that it takes, the amount of self-control that it takes to tell this story. And again, like we've said, not be a blubbering mess and or screaming from the rooftops and or whatever. It takes a lot of composure. So you don't even know what aggression looks like. And since when is telling what happened aggression? But I guess also, you know, every single time that these people or this organization or whoever it is fails to respond the right way, I am also less and less safe. And you know, we've said this before, someone's, you know, the counseling pastor standing up on the stage on January 2nd, acknowledging my abusers, acknowledging that they are people in his community who he is thankful to be in community with, it emboldens them. It sets me up for being unsafe, for them feeling like we are untouchable because this guy just said so. So yeah, there is some aggression in my voice because you will never understand the fallout of your bad response. It is the second wound. And in my situation, it is also a safety concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we can't just be, again, such peaceful, kind always when these are real concerns.
Right. But I think also, you know, this is, again, going back to the racial issues. Again, you know, I have a really, really good friend who I worked with at the clinic who is like, I'm sick of people labeling me as just that angry Black woman, you know? And it's like, okay, but she's angry. She's rightly angry for good reason. And yet you're calling it aggression. And it's like, after so many times of being hurt and of being made to feel all of these things, like, yeah, there is some anger there. And it's people who create change are usually yelling from some kind of platform.
Well-behaved women rarely make history.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah. Isn't that like you have a t-shirt or something? Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has had to be my motto, because the truth is I am a middle child peacekeeper by nature. But that is so,
you are.
I am by nature. Ask anybody who knew me growing up. I was not conflict oriented, but I refused to sit idly by while injustices and happen. So here I am in the hot mess.
Here you are.
Here I am.
Yeah. In this actual boiling pot. Yes.
Okay. Yep. By choice. Here by choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about if when people say, okay, I believe that terrible things happened to Kate.
Yeah. So someone actually confronted my abusers and then came back to me and said, well, I told them I believe terrible things happened to Kate. And I'm not sure if they really hear themselves. Again, it's that whole, like, I want to tell you about yourself right now. But what should have been said was not, I believe terrible things happened to Kate, because that places the onus on me of, you know, I believe she, something's not right is how I hear that. I believe she's kind of crazy. What should be said is, I believe what she says. I believe you did these things, and I stand fully with her and will do everything I can to make sure she is safe and has every chance to heal. That is a very different statement than, I believe some bad things happened to Kate.
But the problem is that when that kind of lukewarm statement of, I believe terrible things happened to Kate, when that lukewarm statement is made, and then we respond with, okay, well, that still doesn't make you a safe person. That doesn't take you from mm-hmm. the unsafe to the safe category. Now the response is, okay, well, that's not fair and that's not right. And you're not being like, you're not helping to move the situation forward, mm-hmm. but that's not on us.
And it's hurtful. That's what people say. It's hurtful that you won't trust me. To which I respond, your feelings are not entirely relevant here. I really can't carry that too. So I'm sorry that it feels hurtful to you, but there's no space for that.
No, there's no space for that. Nor should there be.
No. Yeah. Not when you are trying to come at me and be, you know, this model of a safe person. That
right.
You're not a safe person if that's how you are.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So second wound, you know, it's like not a joke. And people, I think in my experience, people kind of just assume that they are just like, okay, so this person had a bad response, like whatever. Like, okay, like let's take the chapel for instance. People, I think there's been people who have been like, okay, fine, like drop it. It's not like, don't go there anymore, whatever. And I agree. Like at some point it is just like, of course my husband and I are not going there anymore. And, you know, my in-laws have stopped going there and whatever. And that, yes, all of that. But the idea of just let it go because it was nothing it's so much more than that. It's so, like I said, with the safety piece and with just this whole idea of it really being a re-traumatizing situation.
Well, and how many injustices are you supposed to just withstand and then just let it go?
Right. Right. Yeah. And like, what does that even mean? Let it go. Like these things have been imprinted on my life and these people have been imprinted into me. So how do you just let that go? I guess maybe that's something we should talk about in these four walls.
Yeah, I think it might be. Right.
Get on that.
Okay. Solving all the things.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. So that's the second wound. Yeah. Okay. That's it.
So we're going to continue to talk about how do you make sure that you are not a person who now is responsible for creating a second wound. The bottom line is when someone shares with you their painful story, their painful experience, it's important that your response is, I'm here. I see you. I believe you. I will do everything I can to support and encourage your healing. It's not your fault. It is not because of you. Tell me how I can help.
Yeah. And so many people have asked that question. Mm-hmm. How can I help? Which segues me into our next, just wanting to say, a very, very talented, wonderful human being has decided to create a website for us and for the podcast. People have told us that they don't listen to podcasts. And that they, or people who are jumping into this kind of now, and there's already like 20 hours of listening to Lori and I like joke about Mexican food, like nobody's got time for that. And we understand that. Like, to be honest, like, you're going to die when I say this, but I don't listen to podcasts. Like, Patrick will send me podcasts and I'm like, I didn't listen to it, because I don't either. So I do, we do understand that. And so, this lovely person has created a place where my story is written out a little bit clearer. We have episode recaps so that people can just kind of read the information instead of having to listen to it, as well as resources for other survivors, a place where survivors can reach out to us. We've said it before, we will say it again. There were more people involved in this. There were more women, girls, involved in my story as well, that we would love to have their voice in this. So we will have a place for them to be able to reach out to us in a safe way. But yeah, so I don't know really. I think that might be launching maybe Monday. I'm so out of my element with this whole like launch. Like, what are we doing? This is the whole like, are we podcasters or not? Probably not. But but just know that that is coming. So people will be able to follow us there as well.
The sad thing is that anyone just reading is going to miss the amusing little anecdotes.
I mean, obviously listening to us is so much better and more enlightening and way more entertaining. More I mean, yeah. Like, how else would people know about Carissa? You know what I mean?
Right?
Like,
I know. I know.
God, I see her on Wednesday and I got to tell you, like, I need, oh my goodness, I need Carissa right now.
Yay, Carissa.
I know, right? Okay. So anyways, yeah, keep an eye out for that and continue to like us and share it and all of the good things.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888. Or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.